Awesome. This has been kind of a surreal week. It's first week without a senior pastor above me, or lead pastor, Adam. And I've gotten a little bit of trial by fire. I'm sure it's not the most intense week it could have been, but it was pretty good. Got to pretend like I was a real pastor. Yeah. Isn't that awesome? Yeah. It's funny because I was in different kinds of meetings this week. I was in different kinds of interventions. I was in different kinds of, I got to go to the hospital. I mean, it was just like I kind of covered the whole, I didn't do any funerals or weddings. Right? But I've done those before. So it's not like I was a fake pastor before, right? It's not like all of a sudden now I'm a real pastor, but it's just this weird, surreal experience. And it's been really cool. Today I was thinking about this whole thing about, you know, what's a real versus fake, right? And there's a lot of verbiage around the word fake right now, especially in our culture and our media and so forth. And one of the things that just comes up in my head all the time is the quote from So I Married an Axe Murderer. How many of you guys have seen that movie? Right? You know, when he turns and he goes, you know, Mom, I'm a little bit disturbed that you call the world news or the world report or whatever it is. What is it? The Weekly World Report news or the paper, right? Like he's worried about that that they're relying on. So the Weekly World, you know, news or whatever it is would be like the Inquirer, you know what I'm saying, or something along those lines. And this lady's like holding on to it as though these are real facts, these are real things. And she even quotes back to him, it's like it's full of facts, you know. Man gives birth to baby and, you know, these sort of things, right? So a little disconcerting for the characters going back and forth, and it's a real funny movie. And I just couldn't help but think of that in thinking about what's real and what's fake. I read this article on the word fake, and this guy was talking about just kind of the difficulty of that word being used with something. For example, if I use the description a black gun, have I changed the nature of the gun? No, I could still shoot something with it, right? A black gun still will shoot something. But if I call it a fake gun, I've changed the entire nature of the gun, haven't I? I still might be able to use it to intimidate you, but it's not going to actually be able to shoot you, right? So there's something about that word fake versus real. You see what I'm saying? And you can make descriptions, you can add, you know, all you want to do around the word, but nonetheless, you change the nature of something if you call it fake. Yes? Yes. One of the great stories of a someone who watches sports and follows sports is this whole thing about Manti Te'o. Does anybody know that name, Manti Te'o? What do you know about Manti Te'o? I'm sorry, you can't answer right now because your mouth is full. You would be perfect to answer because you probably know it better than anybody. But go ahead.
He played for Notre Dame.
He plays for the Chargers. Uh-huh. Or he might not play for him currently, but he did play for the Chargers. And anybody know why he's so fit? He was touted coming out of Hawaii as the greatest running back of his class. He was the number one, linebacker. He was the top linebacker recruit. And go ahead.
Had an online fake girlfriend.
Okay. Now, the difficulty with the story is, here's what I read about this. This poor guy, I say poor guy because we don't know, right? It's his whole, the whole characterization of this guy's life is now tainted, okay? He was befriended by somebody online by the name of Larray or Lorraine or something like that. Larray, I think, huh? And he ends up having this relationship with her online and going back and forth. Well, it turns out that this was a guy who got this picture, the profile picture, from some other person. You know, he's pretending that it's going to be used to help somebody feel better in the hospital or something. And so he gets this picture from her, creates this entire fake profile, and engages in this relationship with Manti Te'o. And so Manti Te'o is very naive. There's a whole interview with the dad, and the dad's like, he obeys. You know, we called him home because one of the times he's supposed to meet up with this girl in real life, he gets called back to Hawaii. His dad just says, we need you there and stuff like that. And he says he drops everything and he comes. It's just, he just automatically assumes good and he goes for it. He's just that naive in that sense. There was another time where he was supposed to meet up with her where she canceled. But when it started to come out, it became really screwy because he fakes her death in it. Now, whether the other person faked the death or he faked it or he just found out, like, but coming to terms with this reality, he actually lied and kind of contributed to the chaos in the whole thing. Because why? He was embarrassed. You know, it turns out that this is a guy doing this. It turns out that this guy really has feelings for Manti Te'o. And so there's this whole awkward, he's a devout Latter-day Saint Mormon, right? So he's got all kinds of things. Plus he's going to a Catholic school, which is a whole nother conversation. But the point is there's just this whole thing going on here that creates all this chaos. And so forever, he's going to be tainted. His character's reputation is going to be marred. And I think that we have a hard time even understanding what's going on with him because of all this, okay? But I got to thinking about him personally as well. Oh, this is funny. The papers are in the car, up out somewhere else. So anyway, I have a fake sermon for you. Well, sometimes when you're trying to make decisions on what to cut out, some things just sort of happen for you, and then you're just like, you go with it. So I was thinking about Te'o, and just imagine for a minute if you're this guy, right? And you go into this, and let's say he's as naive as the report sort of made him out to be. He is ruined for the rest of his life to have a relationship. I'm not saying he can't have a relationship. I'm saying that every relationship he has from here forward will somehow be marred by this experience. Can you imagine being able to trust and be invested in people after having this sort of thing happen to you? I might be able to pull this off because we have technology. I want to read this one thing to you. One of the things that occurs to me is we long for real truth. We long for us to have something that we can rely on and that we can count on. And when that's taken away from us, it makes us feel unstable. And I think about our lives. I think about how sin invades us and how it dissipates our realities. And sometimes sin happens to us and it really wrecks us. It really just destroys our lives in ways that we can't count or imagine how we're going to go on because of whatever that incident or incidents happen. We all have our growing up stories. We all have things that have happened. And those things have marred you, and they have changed how you look at the world, not necessarily for the good. And then they go further, and sometimes it gets integrated into our own lives, and we begin to perpetuate things out, and it again dissipates us, and it mars us, and it mars other people around us. And as I was thinking about this, one of my favorite stories came to mind. How many of you guys have heard of the Velveteen Rabbit? It says the skin horse lived in the nursery longer than any of the others, and he was old. So old that his brown coat was bald and patches showed through the seams underneath. And most of the hairs on his tail had been pulled out to make string bead necklaces. He was wise, for he had a long succession of mechanical toys arrive to boast and swagger, and by break their mainsprings and pass away. And he knew that they were only toys, and would never turn into anything else. For nursery magic is very strange, and it's wonderful. and only happens to play things that are old and wise and experienced, like the skin horse. What is real? Asked the rabbit one day when they were lying side by side in the nursery fender before Nana came to tidy the room. Does it mean having things that buzz inside you or a stick-out handle? Real isn't how you're made, says the skin horse. It is something that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real. Does it hurt? Asked the rabbit. Sometimes, says the skin horse, for he was always truthful. When you are real, you don't mind being hurt. Does it happen all at once, like being wound up, he asked, or bit by bit? It doesn't happen all at once, said the skin horse. You become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't happen often to people who break easily or have sharp edges or have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off you. Your eyes drop out. You get loose in the joints and very shabby. But those things don't matter at all, because when you are real, you can't be ugly, except to people who don't understand. I suppose you are real, said the rabbit. And then he wished he didn't, for he thought that the skin horse might be sensitive. But the skin horse only smiled. The boy's uncle made me real, he said. That was a great many years ago. But once you're real, you can't become unreal ever again. It lasts for always. I love that story. I love the longing that it has in it, the desire that we just taps into us. We want to become tangible and real. We want to be sincere and connected to who we are, but of course we want to know who God is. I love the story at C.S. Lewis as he's the great divorce, as he begins to walk out, and I don't know if you've read that, but anyway, he pictures the grass as being more real than he is. And as he starts walking on the grass, because this is heaven grass, and he's not in heaven condition. And so he begins to walk out, but it hurts and it pierces his skin, pierces through him. But because he's tenacious, he continues to walk it out, before suddenly he becomes real enough to bend the grass blades of heaven. We want to be real. If you have a book called the Bible, not just any old book, but a real book, not just a fake one. Go ahead and open up to Luke chapter 7. Starting at verse 18. The disciples of John reported all these things to him. So John summoned two disciples and sent them to the Lord to ask, "Are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another?" When the men came to him, they said, John the Baptist has sent us to you to ask, "Are you the one who is to come, or do we wait for another?" Now remember, John the Baptist is where? Where is John the Baptist in this? He's in jail. He's in a very small, confined space. This is a guy that grew up in the wilderness. He had lots of room, all of this stuff. So he's like very small living space right now. And what's about to happen to him? What do we know about John the Baptist? He's about ready to get his head chopped off. So if Jesus is the Messiah, what is the messianic expectation? He's going to save the world, right? There's going to be, you know, troops gathering out, you know, of Jerusalem or, you know, Rome getting ready to invade. There's going to be armies of heaven. There's going to be all this stuff coming out. And so John is hoping that this happens before, not necessarily after, right? So he wants to know. He's also nervous. He's disconcerted. Most of us, when we get in these places of doubt and struggle, it's because there's pressure on us, right? We get into these moments, God, are you real? I need you to be real. Will you be real? And we get into those kind of conversations. Note how Jesus answers them. Jesus had just cured many people of diseases, plagues, and evil spirits. and had given sight to many who were blind. And he answered them, "Go and tell John what you have seen and heard. The blind receive their sight. The lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, the poor have good news brought to them, and blessed is anyone who takes no offense at me." He doesn't just tell them something. He shows them the thing. He shows who he is to John. And he reckons all the way back to that Isaiah passage, 61, where, you know, Jesus is the prophet foretells of somebody who's going to come and free the captives and heal and bind up those that are injured. He doesn't just sit back and wait, or he doesn't try and describe it or make a big old, you know, blah, 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 blah about it. He says, "Look at what I have done. Look at the evidence." We know what's real in Jesus based on what he has done in our lives. You are here. You are a part of this community because of something real that is happening or happened in your life. Somebody has invested in you. Somebody has cared for you. Somebody has made you become more real. And that's one of the reasons you're here. Obviously, we reckon back a little bit to Adam and Wendy, and there is no doubt how they have impacted our lives, how they have, just talking to them grounds you or me in different ways. Certainly their prayers, I'm certain they're praying for us right now. I have no doubt about that. We have had people in our lives that have hand-delivered Jesus and healed us in different ways, and is healing us in different ways. That is this community. That is who we are. We are people who have been healed in a very real way. If you want to become real, let God love you. Let God in. Let him penetrate you in ways that will undo you and make you come alive in a whole new way. Yeah, thank you. I thought I got it all. Thanks. Verse 24, when John's messengers had gone, Jesus began to speak to them, to the crowds, about John. "What did you go out to the wilderness to look at? A reed shaken by the wind? What then did you go out to see? Someone dressed in soft robes? Look, those who put on fine clothes and live in luxury are in royal palaces. What did you go out to see? A prophet? Yes, I tell you, more than a prophet. This is the one who it is written, 'See, I am sending a messenger ahead of you, who will go to prepare your way before you.'" And I'm here to tell you that we are prepared for this next season. We have been well cared for. We have been just full on prepared. We are ready for this next season. And if you doubt that, if you're feeling at all trepidatious about that, I ask you again to pray, check in with each other, work that through. Do not deny. Do not let the Satan voice in your head tell you that it was fake, tell you that love wasn't real, tell you that there are doubts. There's no doubt that you are prepared for this season in your life. He goes on to say, "I tell you, among those born of women, no one is greater than John, yet the least in the kingdom of God is greater than he." And all the people who heard, and including the tax collectors, acknowledged the justice of God, because they had been baptized with John's baptism. They acknowledged that it was real. But refusing to be baptized by him, the Pharisees and the lawyers rejected God's purpose for themselves. And so this is what he has to say. If you want to call it fake, this is what you want to hear. "To them, I will compare the people of this generation. To what then will I compare the people of this generation? What are they like? They are like children sitting in the marketplace and calling to one another. We played the flute for you and you did not dance. We wailed and you did not weep. For John the Baptist has come eating no bread and drinking no wine. And you say he had a demon. The Son of Man has come eating and drinking. And you say, look, a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. Nevertheless, wisdom is vindicated by all her children. The truth will win. The end of the day. The truth will win. Will win. So if you want to become real, this is step one. Accept that grace. Call it real. Put your life in it. Throw everything you got in that direction. Step two, if you want to turn over to Luke chapter 17. Verse 11, on that day, on the way to Jerusalem, Jesus was going through the region between Samaria and Galilee. As he entered a village, 10 leopards approached him, keeping their distance, and they called out, saying, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. And when he saw them, he said to them, go and show yourselves to the priests. And as they went, they were made clean. Then one of them went back. One of them, when he saw that he was healed, he turned back, praising God with a loud voice. He prostrated himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus asked, were there not 10 made clean? But the other 9, where are they? Was none of them found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner? Then he said to him, get up and go your way, for your faith has made you well. I have a friend that I spend time with who actually knows Adam from a whole different environment. And we have all these different kinds of funny conversations. And I'm always struck by how fascinated he is by the gifts that Adam has. You know, just I've known the guy since 1990. I've known him since like for 30, almost 30 years, 27 years. And I think it's funny because it makes me think of like, what if somebody is commenting to Jesus' brother about the great things that Adam did, or the great times. Now I'm making him Jesus. I'm not trying to make him Jesus. But there is a point here. But I just wondered, like if Jesus' brother, you know, is someone's commented on him about how, you know, oh, he did that miracle of this. He's all, oh, yeah, he turns water into wine at the kitchen table all the time. You know what I mean? Like, he just, oh, that's not a big deal for us. That's nothing. You know, and we get used to it, and we get familiar, and can you help me? Thank you. Breeds a certain sense of, like, we relax. We don't think it about. You know, we begin to take it for granted. And I think of that with God. How often do we take these incredible things that he does in our lives as just like, yep, that's just God. That's just a God thing, you know? And we just, we almost minimize it. Not necessarily on purpose. We minimize it. Or we maybe go the opposite direction, right? We go like, oh my gosh, I've got to do this great thing. I've got to say thank you. There's got to be a way to say thank you. And we go way over the top. And we, in the process, we completely forget to say thank you. We go too far. We go too crazy. Sometimes just a simple thank you helps. I was reminded of that. Kimberly reminded me this week. That's part of becoming real. Something happens. Something becomes, you know, we get healed or whatever. And part of what creates tangibility of that action is just our simple gratitude in response to that. In many ways, that is what we do here on Sunday mornings. We come and we gather and we say thank you to God for what he is doing in our lives, for who he is, for how he's making us and others that we love become real. We're not going to stop doing that. We're only, what, this big in a 2,000-year span. We are one little tiny and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, not even a big group of people, right? Little tiny in the entire world of 2,000 years of history. So it can feel overwhelming. It can feel like we're never going to say enough. We're never going to be enough. We're never going to say quite the right way. But that's not the point. The point is simply to just be sincerely and truly grateful and express it. Just express it. That's step two in becoming real. I love the song. It says, you have shown me your favor unending. You have given your life for me. And my heart knows of your goodness. You should sing that over and over again. You have given me your favor unending. He has given us his favor unending. Does anybody know that song? Next part of it is, I will arise and give thanks with my whole heart. I will sing, I will bless with my whole heart. For you have shown mercy, you have shown mercy to me. I give thanks to you, Lord. That's who we want to be. We want to exhibit that. We want to give that out more than we can possibly do. We want to reflect on it, grab it, and turn it back into praise. I will arise and give thanks with my whole heart. Step three is we live it out. We live it out. We don't just tell people about Jesus. We show them Jesus and what he has done personally and to the world around us. We don't hold it back. We don't try and glorify it, make it bigger than real. We just simply try and live it out. We don't hold on to it. Often we're tattered and torn, and often we have these times in our lives where we are just completely challenged in our faith. We're challenged whether this is real. We're challenged on who we are. Can we do this again? Can we get up and go again? Sometimes in the middle of all of that, it gets pounded and pounded and pounded, and we wonder, is this like a 30-year project, like a sandcastle, right? Like a, you know, sandcastle, you make the sandcastle, what happens? And it goes. And you can be upset about that. Or you can start and you build another one. Right? God's in about making stuff come alive and come real. One of these sandcastles will become alive and become real. Right? As we're going, our lives, it feels like it gets washed away. But then we get back on our knees and we go through the process all over again. We go through it again, and it feels like, man, this is never, ever going to stop. It's never going to change. I can't do it. God, will you fix this? Please, something this time. And then he does. He shows up, doesn't he? Time and time again, and we need each other to remind us of that. That is what coming together has to do. We remind each other. We come together. We give thanks. We demonstrate his power. That's the church. We are one little tiny iteration of that, but that's what we're doing here, and that's what the church is doing at large. Amen? Amen. I don't have the quote, but I'll tell it to you as best I can. C.S. Lewis writes this thing about being in the difference between life, right? He says life, the same word for life used, you know, like man, right? We're like the closest thing to God that we know about, right? We are the image of Christ. He made us, you know, an image, right? So we are the closest thing to that is we know about. So he talks about giving us life. But the life that he gives us, we use this word that he says the kind of greatness of space is equal to the same kind of greatness of God. The same word doesn't quite capture it. God is huge, way bigger. You know, like Adam's always said, like, you know, it's not about God out in the universe somewhere. It's the universe bouncing around God somewhere. Like he is vast and huge and expansive, right? So the same kind of word for life doesn't quite carry it. So he splits it up and he says, I want to give this word bios. And bios has this sort of life that is always wearing down. It's a natural life, and it always wears down, and it needs subsidies like air and water and food to keep sustaining it, to keep, and even though that's happening, what else is happening? It's still decaying. So these are like temporary fixes. But he says the life in Christ is this zeos. Did I say it right? Zoe. Zoe is the word, right? The Greek word zoe. And it's a spiritual life. A spiritual life that God gives us. And he says that zoe is the kind of life that if we were like in statues, right? If there's a statue, for that to become zoe, it would have to go through some sort of dramatic transformation. Right? So there's the image or the likeness. He says something to the effect of the difference is I could show you a picture or I could show you Hawaii. Two different things, right? The picture gives you a little, maybe, but you go there and it's a whole different experience. It's the same kind of transformation he's talking about for becoming a statue, becoming a real human being that we'd have to go through. And he ends it by this. He says there's a rumor going around the shop that one day, and I say the shop, the statue shop, if we're the statue shop on some day, but one day we're going to become real. One day we're going to become real. And I love that imagery that we get to be, that's the excitement. It's now and happening to us. We will become real and we are becoming real. Amen? So as FWC, as we move forward, it's just that simple. Let's continue that process. We're going to celebrate communion. And the cool thing about the sacraments, right? The sacrament is one of God's ways of tangibly connecting with us. We have a hard time with this sort of like these sort of ideas. They float around up here somewhere, right? But we have a tangible connection to it through communion. So we're going to turn it over to Danny.